You're about to enjoy TryHards, courtesy of MTGCast.com. If you enjoy TryHards or anything else supplied by MTGCast, please make a donation. Whether it's recurring or one time, you can help offset the very real overhead of bringing you the best podcasts in magic every week. MTGCast at MTGCast.com.
That's what happens when I'm old and fat, I guess.
A road I will not go down.
What would Rich Hagen say about this part of the magic experience?
99.99% of players just automatically skip by.
I can paraphrase the Bible to make God look like an asshole.
Aggro is always rising to the top.
Sales are up 800,000%.
And they looked great on camera to my mind.
There's really no entering that conversation.
Oh, you brave soul, hanging out for one more episode of TryHards. Coming up this week, Gideon Tribal is real. What would Rich Hagen say about this part of the magic experience? Don't worry, we'll make sure to clearly define our untap step here on TryHards. I'm Sean Seacrease, he's Brian Tibbetts, and he's Matt Hurley. Matt, get us started, since I was just with you this last week. Are you drinking anything right now as good as what we had at the Ram?
Not even close. Drink it in October, simple Oktoberfest. Still got a few of them rattling around somewhere. So I'm like, that sounds like I just wanted a beer tonight.
Brian, what are you drinking tonight?
I went a little fancy tonight, gentlemen. I received a very good Christmas present from a good friend of mine who gave me all of the ingredients to make myself the old-fashioned whiskey, which included some bitters, some Maker's Mark, and an orange. Hence, I'm having a whiskey old-fashioned, and it is delicious.
An old-fashioned is one of the ways that I judge a bar when they tell me that they can make a great drink. And one place that came through was, quote, that other place we were at, according to Matt. That was Nikki Blaine's on the Circle in downtown Indianapolis. One of my favorite getaway places, and we enjoyed our time, our cigars, and our drinks there. Thanks for introducing me to the Kentucky Mule, Matt. That's going to become part of the rotation here at the house. As for what I have in Command Central this evening from Victory, it's the Blackboard series, the Black Forest Cake Stout with cherry. And it tastes like everything that you just thought of. It is chocolatey, it is rich, it is dense, and it's got a little bit of cherry to it as well. So we'll see. With the colder weather, I'm into the deeper, heavier beers, and this one's been very good so far. That brings us up to the magic that we played this week. Brian, I know you got to play a little magic. How'd it go for you?
I did get to play some magic, which is hilarious because people always ask me, how much have I ever played online? And I'm like, define online, and they look at me and they say, magic online? I'm like, oh, yeah, yeah, I've never played that. And they're like, oh, but you've played magic online? I'm like, oh, yeah, all the time. Like, what do you do? I'm like, oh, Skype. It's awesome. Skype and a camera. Oh, I get it. So, yeah, that's what Sean and I got to do this week, which was great. Sean had a crazy idea of a pretty cool modern build. So anytime somebody wants to play modern, I'm down with that.
Basically, what I've been talking about, it's the doubling season Samet the Tested combo, which I don't like that as a name for it. So I bounced this name off of my PR department, i.e. Tryhard Brian, and he liked it better. I'm calling it Mother of Dragons. Because she goes and gets Ugin the Spirit Dragon and Nicol Bolas and puts them into play at the same time. So it's kind of a tightrope to walk between ramping out doubling season early and making sure that you don't die on the turn that you play it, because it is a 5-mana enchantment and you usually don't have any mana up the turn that you play it. So getting a clear board, whether it's through, I've tried Condemn, Lightning Bolt, Path to Exile, we'll see how it works. But it actually surprised me, because Brian was playing Tron, Eldrazi Tron specifically, and I split it 3-3. That was much better than I thought this would ever go.
Totally. Totally, yeah. With me, too. And then we got on last night when they announced that I had a snow day today for school. So I immediately texted Sean and said, hey, you want another view of a different modern deck for Mother of Dragons? And so we popped on and I played Modern Burn. I don't think I kept as accurate records last night, Sean, but I think Modern Burn got the best of Mother of Dragons most of the games, correct?
Yeah, that one was 4-2 you. That was a little bit more of a struggle.
It seemed like it would be completely the opposite, you know, just kind of on face value. I thought that the Eldrazi was going to have much better game, but Eldrazi is such a non-interactive deck if you don't have Chalice down. And Chalice for his deck doesn't really hit a whole lot of things. It really was a much different kind of outcome than what I would have thought, but I think it's a cool idea.
Yeah, and I've got a couple different variations of that running around in my head. If anybody's interested, I'll post some stuff on the Patreon page, but this is just Sean's latest wacky idea. Matt, what Magic did you get to play this week?
Played a little bit of Pauper online. I've been able to play it when I was with Sean. I don't know how, but apparently drinking too much somehow hurt my back. So I was kind of laid up for like 3 or 4 days over the weekend. That's what happens when I'm old and fat, I guess. That format is a ton of fun. It reminds me a lot of Legacy. It's somewhere between Legacy and Tiny Leaders as far as how close to Legacy it is. Going to continue to play Pauper. That's all I really got to play. I didn't do any FNM, and this weekend I'm just looking forward to playing some of the pre-release and then possibly some Pauper as well.
The Magic that I got to play this past week, outside of playing with Brian in our version of online, I actually did play some digital Magic. I've mentioned that I had an invite to become part of the Arena beta. And Matt, I want to ask you about this. This doesn't have anything to do with playing on beta. Rather, this is becoming readily apparent to me now that I'm getting used to sort of playing digitally. You're the one who's played the most Magic online out of the three of us. I noticed that when I play now, I have more of a detachment, a cool clinical detachment to the game, and I analyze it a lot better than when I play in person with physical cards. I seem to be more emotionally wrapped up in my choices when I'm holding the cards and sitting at the event versus looking at the monitor. Have you noticed that there's a difference in the way that you approach Magic between playing in meat space and digital space?
I think part of it goes back to you don't know your opponent, you don't see your opponents. So you don't have that social aspect of the game, but at the same time, you don't have that social detraction from the game either. Playing online reminds me of playing against pros. Not that they're unfriendly, but they're very, they're focused on what they're doing. They're not BSing during the game, whereas if I'm playing Sean or Brian, I'm making fun of them, laughing, and I'm like, this is a terrible card. The online kind of fosters that. I wouldn't call it anti-socialism, but it's definitely you become detached from the game and you go into just essentially playing the game and that's it. Completely take out the opponent other than reacting to their plays and molding your gameplay to follow what they're doing.
Yeah, I think it's a part of my game that I need to adopt a little bit more of in real life. Not being anti-social, but being able to distance myself emotionally a little bit and make better decisions as the game goes along. No Patreon drawing this week. We started the new year with our drawing. Next week is going to be an episode of Byhards, as I'll be on the road working. So Matt and Brian will be hosting episode 3 of Byhards. And then Tryhards will get back together coming up on the 22nd for recording. And we'll have our next Patreon drawing then. But in lieu of a drawing tonight, every once in a while, we get an email that's good enough that it makes it through the filter and onto the show. And Jarrett Owen has made it through that filter. He says, Tryhards, firstly, I'm not drinking anything at the moment because I don't want the stench of hypocrisy tainting my analysis of Matt's insanity. I assume he's very clearly abusing some very strong mind-altering hallucinogens. I apologize for not keeping up with the entirety of the podcast. You know, sometimes life gets in the way. I'm part of the way through Land Ho, and I had to stop at around 11th place on your top 20 lists and write this out. So I apologize to Brian and Sean if you've already done the job of belittling Matt post this point in the show for what can only be described as heresy. Shops, Bazaar, Academy, and Library. How did you let Matt get away with placing not one, not two, but all 4 of the best lands of all time at the wrong end of the list? I'm not sure whether or not you noticed, Matt, but Dredge seems to be an okay deck in Vintage. Granted, it's only been top tier for a decade, but hey, it's early. Additionally, Library Draw Go has been a staple of the meta control for 20-plus years. I feel like Matt must be in the list of people when facing a turn one library who simply aren't smart enough to realize that they've already lost the game. Rant over. You guys do a great job. Hope winter isn't too bad up north. If I could, I'd send you some sunshine from Brisbane. Thanks, Jarrett. That made my week seeing that email from you.
So you guys have not belittled me as much as I should. I did rate them lower than I should have. But
really? Really? Yeah. Shockingly. Shocking.
I know, but you guys did not belittle me as much as I expected it. I will say I'm mainly looking at how format warping those cards are. From the vintage metagame I've looked at, Dredge was just kind of one of those things that pops up. And then it goes away, and then it pops up. And yes, I did put them lower, but yeah, I knew I was going to get some feedback like this.
Brian, am I the only one finding Matt's excuses feeble on this front?
If you're wondering why we didn't just come down on you like a ton of bricks, at some point, it's kind of like when you read something online, and you just kind of have to shake your head and be like, well, there's really no entering that conversation, and you just kind of walk the other way. So that's where I was with it. There was no convincing you otherwise, because you had given me your, albeit wrong, but somewhat rationale on why you had ranked them where they were. And you're absolutely entitled to your opinion. I didn't think it was worth the airspace to just have a dump on Hurley episode.
Yeah, thank you for the email, Jared. TheTryHards3@gmail.com if you want to interact with the cast. Guys, that brings us up to this week's tournaments. I have to admit something. It was late Saturday after working all day that I was sitting on the couch having my second beer, and I looked at the girl and went, oh my God, there's actual live Magic going on. There was so much space around the holiday break that I had gotten out of the rhythm of checking in on Twitch and looking at the tournament action that weekend. I jumped on just in time to catch some of GP Santa Clara and SCG Columbus, and we'll get to both, but I want to start on the West Coast. 493 trios got together for team trios, Standard, Modern, and Legacy. Martin, Ho, and Fry ultimately defeated Nettles, Wijaya, and Angulescu, but there were several things that cropped up at this event that made it memorable for me. First of all, travel issues between weather and everything else that comes up in life had teams frantically scrambling to mix and match and field teams of three on the weekend. The unstable lands were everywhere, and they looked great on camera to my mind. And as a stream, well, the whole GP weekend largely avoided Standard. Brian, what takeaways did you have from taking a look at the first GP of the year?
I thought that they did a great job on the coverage, leaning a lot heavier toward Modern and Legacy, because I think that they know that that's where their prime audience is going to be tuning in. With the weekend before Rivals of Ixalan pre-release, Standard is kind of at that very, very, you know, lull spot. There's not going to be a whole lot of brand new stuff happening. Seeing as much Modern and Legacy covered, I thought was really, really good. Some of the gameplay I thought could have been a little tighter, but overall, we had some excellent players and a lot of drama at the end to kind of take the title down on that top team. They played really, really well.
Matt, was the actual gameplay being featured interesting to you, or were you just frantically getting updates on your new Pauper hotline?
Today, actually, I listened to Joe Lissette kind of go through the tournament. He does a really good job of going through and making all the or saying all the plays, what he played and what he would change. And I got to give the everyone props too for all the travel problems and actually able to find people that were missing teammates and making sure everyone had teams. So it was a cool thing. And I do kind of think this team trios fad will wear off, you know, in Q1, Q2, where it's just going to be too busy. There's just going to be too much going on, and people want to go back. And hopefully Standard will be more interesting, so that might help as well.
That's where you're going to leave it? Really? You spent most of last week's show salivating over Pauper coming to GP weekends. So go ahead, and why don't you pick us a pack of paper Pauper to get the year started?
The professor over at Tulane Community College has been pushing Pauper. He said there was over 120 people actually at the Pauper side event on Sunday. That's pretty good for a side event on a Sunday. It sounded like everyone was having a blast. People were playing Tron. There's a lot of blue control decks. I can't wait to see some of the deck lists that come out of this. I am super excited. I'm going to try and go up to play Pauper in two Sundays or when it's in GP Indy, and the professor will also be there as well. So hopefully I'll get a chance to meet him. I personally am playing right now Blue-Red Delver. It's relatively competitive. Plus, it's got a Ninja of the Deep Hours in it, so I can't say no to something like that. The only issue I see there is that as this gets more more popular and as the pros kind of do everything, I hope it doesn't get broken where, you know, they just find out, okay, this is the best deck. This is going to be a big defining format too, as far as the whole financial side of everything goes. But when you can build an entire deck and play in a powered competitive tournament, and it's the cost of a Goyf or a Mana Crypt to build the entire deck, more power to you. And that's, I hope that this continues for a long while.
I'll just woe you back there on worrying that pros are going to break the format. We're nowhere near this being a format that they need to tackle. It's not going to be a GP format anytime soon. It's not going to be. So we don't have to worry about the pros stepping in and breaking Pauper. From the West Coast, where team trios were the order of the day, to where everyone had to play for their own fate, SCG kicked off their new season in Columbus with a Modern Open. 959 players had nothing better to do with their lives than to play the wild, wild west that is Modern. Gideon Tribal is apparently a real deal, and Ranger of Eos is the new tech for Death Shadow. All this kind of confuses me. What's not confusing is the power of Jeskai. Benjamin Nikolic, who's been espousing Jeskai in the format since seemingly its inception, apparently handed off his list to Kevin Jones, then met him in the finals in a Jeskai mirror, which Nikolic won. Caleb Shearer, Dylan Donegan, Jonathan Rossum, they were all part of that stacked top 8. Top 12 decks, as we look at it, 4 of them were Jeskai. No other archetype had even 2 copies in that top 12. A little bit of a caveat to that, Death Shadow did have 7 of the top 32. Brian, you're looking at this Modern format as a new season begins. Are you interested in what went down here and how would it affect your deck pick going forward?
People have known for a while now that the blue-white control, and I guess a little bit less understood was the Jeskai control, just because there's, you can go a lot of different ways. These two lists from Jones and Nikolic were really, really strong. I love the one of Nahiri the Harbinger in there. I love the one of Torrential Gearhulk in there. And on the red side, when you're splashing for things like Electrolyze, Lightning Helix, those are the kinds of cards that are going to have a little bit of reach, but also give you a lot of value. And I think that was really, really great. The one thing I love about the control list is they're really making use of Search for Azcanta. That card, I think, is going to be a mainstay in Modern for a long time coming. So this looks like maybe the best deck at the moment. I don't even see. It was close with the blue-red Gift Storm with Shearer, and Shearer is one of the best at playing Storm decks, period. Overall, I as the game went on, I was just kind of like, man, Jones just has too many answers, and Shearer's just going to run out of gas. It's kind of like when you're playing a burn deck, if you're not going to win in the first 6-7 turns or have your opponent way, way, way deep on the ropes, it's really hard to come back from that. And that's what the Jeskai control list can do, is really just kind of grind your opponent down. Other than that, I love just the variety of decks we see. Blue-red Kiki Moon, Humans, Scred Red. There was a lot of Grixis Death Shadow decks, as you said, Sean. Mono Green Devotion, even making the top 16. These are the kinds of decks that I think people can look at this and say, oh, that looks like something I'd love to play.
Brian, did it really just take Search for Azcanta and opt in the format to make control real? Is that really all we were waiting for?
I don't think that was all we were waiting for, but I think people have kind of gotten away from maybe some of the Tron list that I've been advocating for a few weeks now. They just don't seem to be as powerful because everything is kind of fast and low to the ground. And so control decks can feed on the fast, low to the ground decks quite a bit. You know, they can have the answers. You can opt for things. You can Sphinx's Revelation and get yourself right back into a game. No, I don't think those are the two cards that have actually just put it over the top. But I think things have shifted back to the low end where people are playing more of those fast decks. And therefore, control is going to always have a slot in that metagame if that's what most of the other people are playing.
I've been playing Eldrazi Taxes, and I have to wonder how that stacks up against these Jeskai control decks, because I didn't really see any on camera. I wasn't watching closely, but I didn't see any on camera. I didn't see any kind of high up in the list, but I feel like it might have a pretty good Jeskai control matchup for the Eldrazi Taxes. So I think there's definitely decks to counter this Jeskai control. It was Patrick Sullivan. You know, he kind of went, I wouldn't say on a rant, but he did a pretty good video talking about like game design. The consensus there is what I've always said. It's a fun format for smaller tournaments, for even open level tournaments. You know, it's a fun format, but once you get up into GP or above or Pro Tour formats, it's a very difficult format to not necessarily solve, but it's a very difficult format to actually play professionally at a consistent level.
We'll watch because there are a lot of Modern events going forward in the first half of this year. Modern also had a classic while SCG was in Columbus. 247 people. Casey Welch on Affinity got his aggro on and knocked off Annalise Faustino, who was on Green Red Tron. To wrap up the Modern portion of the weekend, Legacy Classic, 155 players of discerning quality and superior cut got together to play the best format of all time. Richie Thompson on Blue Red Delver defeated Matthew Dilks on Lands. Guys, this is a format that saw a lot of variety in the top eight. Metal Worker and 12 Post. Model Brown 12 Post. Well, okay, there were a couple Tomb of Yawgmoths in there. Both made the top eight. Matt, I know you were a 12 Post guy once upon a time. Are you dusting those off right now?
Nope, because it's not mono green. But these, I still think that deck is still quite good. The Czech Pile players kind of got pushed out. Legacy, it's still awesome. I mean, you still even got Merfolk poking its head up at 14th place there, and you've got Storm at 12th, and it's just fun. That's all it is, just fun.
Brian, your boo, as the kid said, took first place. Blue Red Delver. Are you excited for this, or are you starting to think about Metal Worker in a different light?
I'm definitely not thinking about Metal Worker. I that's just too much work trying to come up with all those cards. You know, there's a level, a road I will not go down, and that's one of them. I appreciate the Metal Worker deck, though. It's a really great list. I'm looking at the very top of the page here at the Blue Red Delver list, and I love Richard Thompson's list with the addition of the one Cryptic Serpent, basically doing a fine Bedlam Reveler impersonation, which it costs one less to cast for each instant and sorcery card in your graveyard. So you could get this down on two blue, whereas Bedlam Reveler would be two red. A 6/5 for two blue in this deck is actually really, really good. So that's a card that I think I've seen on a couple of different blue-red lists. Never really, you know, thought to slot it in, but I think I may need to take a look at that and see what I could cut from my current list. I do like the only having two Storm Chaser Mages. I'm running two Young Pyromancers in my build, and so this one is getting just a little bit bigger, a little bit harder hitting as opposed to the more controlling variety that I have. But I really, really like this deck a lot. I think I'm going to stick with it for a while. It's got a lot of play and can kind of kill you out of nowhere with the Thunderous Wrath and with the Fire Blast. It's just such a fun deck to play.
See, there are options to Deathrite Shaman in Legacy, and they even win every so often. Before we head out to talk about what Rich Hagen said at the GP this weekend, there's one more issue that we have to unpack before we leave Columbus. There was a clip circulated late Sunday night and into Monday of Corey McDuffie on Grixis Death Shadow in the midst of a match with James Melich, who was on Blue-Red Kiki Moon. There was a creature of McDuffie's that Melich had stolen with Shackles. And so it's at that point that the judges involved in the feature match area have to get involved. Matt, you pointed this video out to us. What caught your eye and why circulate it? Because this looks like nothing more than a dispute that was ultimately arbitrated.
I don't think this is particularly somebody trying to cheat, but we've heard angle shooting. Essentially what happened was when he was untapping, he touched his shackles, and Corey McDuffie said that since he touched his shackles, he never actually declared he was not untapping it, and so that it automatically became untapped and he gained control of his Tasigur back. This is something that, yes, technically, had he untapped it and then tapped it back and said, I declare not to untap it or something along those lines, it would have gone back to him. But this is also one of those things, 99.99% of players just automatically skip by and they don't intentionally declare, I'm not untapping this, because untapping is not, you can't just keep things tapped for no reason. You know what the intention was. I understand you have to take every single percentage point you can to win these games, but at the same time, guys, come on, use a little common sense. That's all I got to say. Use some common sense.
The judge who was in the feature match area actually posted his opinion of what happened on Reddit, and I was able to run it down before the show. I'll paraphrase. The call began when James untapped his permanents, thought for a second, and then retapped them. I ruled that by untapping all of his permanents, he had moved to his upkeep, and he had lost the chance to do anything in Corey's end step. At this time, Corey said that he thought James had untapped Shackles and that the Tasiger should go back to him, Corey, the owner, and he moves the creature at this point to his side of the board to demonstrate that. That's what you see in the video, and it's posted on our Patreon page. I ruled that I did not see the Shackles untap, and that James said he certainly did not mean to untap it. Corey seemed unhappy, not in an overly aggressive way, but he just wanted a second opinion. I got the head judge. At this point, you see the long break. The head judge agreed with me that the Shackles remain tapped. Then I discussed with the head judge whether Corey falsely represented information, and it is in my opinion, and I believe the head judge's, this is the judge who took the call writing this, that Corey did not lie to us about the game state. That is a disqualifiable offense, as he did not claim that the Shackles was untapped. Rather, he just said he wasn't sure of the procedure. This is something we would categorize as angle shooting for sure, not cheating. So, Brian, are we just blowing this up? Because, as it's famously been said, I can paraphrase the Bible to make God look like an asshole.
Absolutely. No, I think these are the fascinating points that come up in tournament play. And you're right. Corey McDuffie, who's a grinder, he's had a lot of success on the SCG. He's looking to get any edge that he can. When I looked at the video, the big thing, knowing what the card says, knowing what Vidalkin Shackles says, his opponent never touched Vidalkin Shackles. He may have touched Tasiger, the card that he had taken with Shackles, but he never touched Shackles. And to me, if you've never gone over to untap or tap that, it's an over and done with conversation, because that creature, its actions are determined by what you do with Shackles, not the other way around. There's no other intent that can possibly happen. And so, yeah, it got a tiny bit messy, and I think his opponent, McDuffie's opponent, should have been a little bit cleaner and made a decision and then moved his hands. But, you know, we're all a little guilty of that. So, yeah, McDuffie had a little bit of a beef, and I wasn't really in favor of what he was saying at all. But I think it's good to just remind us that we need to be clean and efficient with our actions and our movements on the table so that this kind of stuff just doesn't happen anymore. But yeah, to me, this was a non-starter, and I think the judges got it right.
Yeah, accuracy in movements is always something that's appreciated. And what I meant by my comment was that you can take a clip of anything and it's taken out of context. The clip that is circulating is about 20, 30 seconds. You can find, and I linked to the SCG page that has the entire match. So you can watch this get resolved as well, so that you don't make a decision just based on a small clip. That was the action that was had this weekend. Well, this whole weekend coming up is off. So with both the GP and SCG tour off this weekend, it is for the Rivals of Ixalan pre-release. Have fun doing that at your local store. I wonder what Rich Hagen would refer to a pre-release as. Were either of you two watching the GP this weekend when Hagen started busting out some new terminology for different parts of the broadcast? He referred to the early morning Sunday as Good Morning Magic for rounds 9 and 10. It was with Rich, Maria, and JVL. He's described as a come hang out with us as we start our Sunday off. It was your home for weird, wild, and wacky decks that were still standing in the main event. They had guests. It was a much more casual feel to the cast at that point, and lots of different magic. He then said they'd be transitioning to the MTG Red Zone show for rounds 11 through 14 with Marshall and crew. That would be the best of the best matches that mattered as they headed toward the top four. This was obviously for Team Trios over the weekend. They would be following the top pros and the top teams and teams that were in elimination games. And then Sunday Night Magic, the top four with Marshall and friends. Only four teams are now left. This will be our coverage of the semifinals and then seeing the winners emerge with the most serious of magic minds. This was more than just Rich Hagen making it up as he went. This had graphics to accompany it, and I'm wondering what you guys think, Brian, about magic presenting itself as different morsels that you can consume during one cast. Let's face it, this was GP Santa Clara from tip to tail. But if you're going to brand different segments of the stream, I think it might be a good way to get different people to tune in. If you're going to have a more casual set at one point of the day and then a more professional take on the game later on, this may open the gate further to those looking to either consume or get into playing the greatest game in the world.
Fascinating. I did not catch Hagen's comments. It sounds exactly like something that he would love doing and probably had put a lot of thought into and probably dreamt about it and, you know, woke up out of a dream and scribbled down on pieces of paper.
Let me just say, the puns were flying.
Part of this is we're always watching professional magic when you're tuned in to Rich Hagen. But I kind of do like the, hey, we're going to be a little sillier. We're going to be a little less worried about the rules and, you know, the coverage and things like that. We might be talking about some other things earlier in the day versus later in the day when, you know, money is on the line. There's pro points on the line. People are tired and a little grumpy at the end of umpteen rounds of magic. We have to give it the gravitas that it deserves. I don't know if that's going to be a good marketing tool or not. I think you're interested in watching tournament magic or you're not. I don't know of anybody who sits down and watches multiple hours of it at a time. I usually try to catch it here and there on the Saturday if I can, just to kind of get a flavor for, you know, who's on the broadcast, what decks people are playing. And then I try to tune in near the end, and I would not have any problem with a little levity even toward the end of the day. But it's got to be natural. It's got to fit with the announcer's personality. So I don't think I'd be in favor of maybe getting the broadcast divided up. I'm curious as to how you would even do that, because you don't have a set time that rounds are over. You know, you could have a slow morning going on and, you know, people are tuning in. Okay, this is my kind of fun time. Wait, why is everybody so serious all of a sudden? I don't see that taking off too much.
Matt, you're always after Magic to try to bring more people into the game. Is offering a different viewing experience at different sections of the same GP something that ultimately may pay off in your eyes?
I think it is. I disagree with Brian on this one, because I do think that by compartmentalizing the coverage and having a consistent coverage in each of those compartments, maybe you have consistent people all the time, or maybe you have just consistency throughout it. Maybe I can say to Sean, or even hell, even if I was, you know, talking to Lauren, hey, I've got to watch Red Zone Magic today. It's on from 2 to 5. Unless there's a issue, the time frame is going to be roughly the same. I mean, you're going to be within a half hour or so of what that will be any other weekend, just because they know that the last half of day one goes on for so many rounds. The rounds are this long, and especially now that Miracles is out of the format and you don't have 1 hour and 40 minute rounds, I think this is a good thing, and it makes it easier to digest Magic, because, you know, I've said it in the past and I'll say it again and again, Magic is just not a spectator sport for non-Magic players.
While you're waiting for your favorite Magic show to come on, one thing that may keep you busy is the new Rivals of Ixalan survey. The mothership has this out, and if you jump on quickly, you may be able to give Magic your feedback based on what you think of the Ixalan set so far. With you on your way to do just that, it's time for us to get on our way to the elevator tonight. I see you've got an old-fashioned one with a hand crank. You going to be able to talk and crank at the same time?
Resplendent Mentor. In Rivals of Ixalan, there's actually an infinite combo with it, and people have been going crazy about this. Sales are up for Resplendent Mentor like 800,000% since Famished Paladin has been released. So essentially with Resplendent Mentor, unlimited life. You can currently get them under about $1. I think they're just going to go up. I would focus on foils. These are old Shadowmoor block. Foils are currently about $3 or $4. Resplendent Mentor, I'd say pick up your foils if you can get them under about $3 or $4.
A holdover from when the Kithkin were evil. Resplendent Mentor in the elevator this week. That brings us up to 3 minutes to brew. Our brew master is suited up. What do you got for us, Brian?
Today I've got a card that has got no shortage of some attention out of Rivals of Ixalan. This is Rekindling Phoenix. We've had kind of dud Phoenixes over the course of the last 3 or 4 years, but I think Wizards have finally got it right on this one. The artwork is not incredible, but I love what the card does. 2 red and 2 for a 4/3 flyer. When Rekindling Phoenix dies, create an 0/1 red elemental creature token with, at the beginning of your upkeep, sacrifice this creature and return target card named Rekindling Phoenix from your graveyard to the battlefield. It gains haste until end of turn. Guys, it seems to me that this card has a lot of power and has a lot of potential, but I want to see in what direction you might take it. Is this a build around or a supporting cast member?
I think that the Phoenix brand may be jumping back, considering that this is the first one that has even tickled me since Chandra's Phoenix, and that was oh so long ago, that maybe they need to rise from the flames a little bit more often. Sean's list of do's and don'ts, if you want to get the most out of Rekindling Phoenix, and that is, don't play this in any format where Deathrite Shaman is legal. Do play this in formats that are grindy. Unfortunately, this is in red. Red hasn't traditionally been included in grindy rock-style decks. If this had been an undead Phoenix and it was black, I think that would have been fantastic for where I could see this going. The first green Phoenix, and you have some sort of life or rebirth Phoenix, and they had thrown some green in there. Again, great. Grindier decks tend to incorporate those colors. I think this one might be a victim of being in the wrong color because of its family ties. Phoenix have been red in Magic, and again, they get away from grindier games. Does red need some reach and some game when the game goes long? Yeah, but I don't know if this is going to be fast enough. Even though it does get haste, which makes it intriguing, as long as you stay away from Deathrite Shaman.
I think this is actually a really good card. I disagree with Sean on this. Not because it's going into Eternal formats. Anything where Exile is common, or Deathrite Shaman, I'm not sure why you would be playing this anywhere where Deathrite Shaman is legal. I think this is a good card, but this is a weird Phoenix because it's a blocking Phoenix. So you block, you get the Phoenix back at the beginning of your turn. I do think if there's a Grixis control or a Mardu control deck in Standard, then I think in Standard this will be a player. Not a lot of stuff in the big decks. Trample. So being able to chump block with this is huge. Anything that you get a bonus for stuff dying, maybe Scarab God eats this. I mean, honestly, I don't know.
I kind of disagree with that and with Sean about this. I think that one of the hallmarks of a new set being released is that aggro is always rising to the top. And this is going to be one of those cards that we're going to see a lot of in the opening month or so of Rivals being out. And I think that this might be the efficient kind of recursion card that maybe Ramunap Red needs to battle some of the Teemer Energy decks. And until the format really shakes out with some new archetypes and to really take advantage of the power level of Rivals, this could be a main player. I just think that there's too much good recursion that you can get out of Rekindling Phoenix that has to get taken care of over and over and over again. So barring any interactions with Deathrite Shaman, or Rest in Peace for that matter, I think we can safely assume that Rekindling Phoenix is going to have a place in the early days of Standard moving forward.
Rekindling Phoenix. Would I like one in my pre-release pack? Absolutely.
Sign me up. Hell yes.
Our 3 minutes to brew this week here on Try Hards. That brings us up to what we did to get better at Magic this week. Guys, I'll lead off. I simply have to integrate what I was talking about at the beginning of the cast, and that is a more dispassionate clinical approach to my live Magic. I have gained some of that now playing more online, and it is my goal coming up in the next few tournaments that I play to get a little bit more dispassionate and a little bit more focused on the decisions that I'm making when I'm playing live. Matt, what have you been doing to get better at Magic?
Jumped into a new format. I had obviously played Pauper before, but hadn't actually taken it as kind of a serious format. Now I'm starting to learn some intricacies of a new format, and I feel that kind of, I don't know, that excitement about saying, oh yeah, this is a new way to play Magic, because it is a different format for sure. The part I'm not excited about is trying to hammer down a consistent stream date. I will have a consistent date that I will stream every week, but we still have to figure out what that is. I just don't think Sunday afternoon is going to work out for me. Work with us on that, but looking forward to Rivals this weekend, and then in 2 weeks, GP Indy. It's going to be a nice Magic January for me.
Brian, what have you been doing to get better at Magic?
I, like Hurley, am kind of excited that there's this new injection of excitement over Pauper. Pauper is a format that anybody can get into. It's not going to be that much. Heck, you can go out and buy people a couple Pauper decks for presents, kind of do the work for them just to get them involved. It's not going to set you back that much money. I kind of hope Wizards adopts this as maybe the entry level. New to Magic, get into Pauper. We'll teach you how to play it, and then you can kind of play tournament Magic, or, you know, at least competitive Magic right off the bat with your kind of underpowered yet completely fun deck to play. I think it's pretty awesome that that is something that they have listened to the community about and decided to introduce at their tournaments. Personally, I am going to be playing more Magic in 2018. I've made that a goal and looking forward to the pre-release to get that started off Friday night, midnight at the shop.
Oh, you brave soul. Thanks for joining us for a mid-January edition of Try Hards. We'll see you next time.